This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of September 22nd, 2005.
All right, police!
Bad cop.
Donut.
Bad. Cop.
No. Donut.
It's under law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for our first interview with a police officer. Samuel Clark was a police officer for more than 20 years in Newark, New Jersey. He has written a book called Total Misconduct, which chronicles his attempt to expose misconduct and racism in the Newark Police Department. We'll be speaking with Samuel Clark later in this program. But first, we'll have a look at what the police have done for us lately. A new report says that prosecutors in Los Angeles County rejected 3/4 of the officer misconduct cases which they receive. The LA Times reports that last year, 111 out of 141 officer misconduct cases involving LAPD and LA County Sheriff's Department officers were not proceeded upon. Among the cases rejected were sheriff's deputies who had lied on the witness stand, stole $6,000 from a jail inmate, and had sex with an inmate in a closet. A case against a San Francisco police lieutenant is in jeopardy because a key witness is refusing to cooperate. A 21-year-old woman filed a complaint that in July of 2003, Lieutenant Jerry Lankford pulled her into his SUV and held her there against her will for 30 minutes. Lankford is accused of offering her money for sex during the incident. The woman settled the lawsuit in April for $10,000. At the same time, she signed an agreement not to testify in any future legal or disciplinary proceedings against the officer. Lankford has had a troubled past. Prior to 2003, there was an incident where he was aggressive and confrontational with an officer who had pulled him over for driving with a towel covering his SUV's license plate. In 1982, Lankford was suspended for 60 days for soliciting sex from an undercover Oakland police officer. The former chief of police in Centerville, South Dakota, is facing at least a dozen charges in connection with sexual misconduct with a teenager. KELO reports that Rain Adamson is accused of having sex with a 14-year-old several times in July and August of this year. Adamson is charged with 3 counts of statutory rape, 3 counts of sexual contact with a person under the age of 16, and a half dozen other charges. He was arrested on September 9th and is currently free on a $10,000 bond, despite the fact that he is accused of threatening the victim and her family to keep them quiet. A police officer in Seymour, Missouri, was arrested last week after being accused of sodomizing a 5-year-old boy. The Webster County Citizen says that Officer Alvaro Cassiano has been charged with statutory sodomy in the first degree. The mother of the victim is an ex-girlfriend of the officer. A police officer in St. Louis, Missouri, was sentenced last Friday to 6 years in prison for falsifying drug possession charges against 2 men. The Associated Press reports that Reginald Williams was found guilty in April of obstruction of justice and making a false statement to a federal official. According to testimony at the officer's trial, Williams falsely arrested several people for possession of crack cocaine in August 2001. Prosecutors said the arrests were part of a pattern of misconduct dating back to 1996. Williams has not been fired and remains suspended without pay for the time being. A Tinley Park, Illinois police officer is facing a variety of charges after crashing his squad car through 2 mailboxes and a fire hydrant. According to the Daily Southtown, Officer Michael Beaucaire has been charged with reckless driving, damage to village property, and 2 counts of criminal damage to property. Beaucaire has been on paid leave since September 3rd, when the incident took place, and is currently free on bond. He will appear in court next on September 29th. A police officer in Bull Valley, Illinois, was arrested after an argument with his wife on September 10th. The Northwest Herald says that Officer Stephen Lely has been charged with unlawful restraint, domestic battery, and resisting police officers. Lely is accused of pulling his wife's hair during a fight and then locking the woman and their 2-year-old daughter in the bathroom of the trailer where they live. Police officers who responded to the home say that Lely made an attempt to get to his loaded gun, but that officers were able to restrain him before he could do so. Officials in Rockdale, Illinois, suspended a police officer without pay last Friday. The Joliet Herald News says that Officer Stephen Kissell is under suspension, but no reason for the action has been made public. The officer is believed to be responsible for an investigation of the local police chief conducted by the Illinois Attorney General's office. A police sergeant in East St. Louis, Illinois, resigned from his job on Friday as part of a plea agreement that will see criminal charges against him dropped. The Belleville News-Democrat says that Sergeant Fred Wills was charged with wire fraud and obstructing justice. If he does not break any laws in the next 18 months, the charges will be dropped. In addition to his resignation, he is forbidden to work in law enforcement and must inform the court of any changes in his employment or student status. A sheriff's deputy in Lucas County, Ohio, was charged with public indecency after he was accused of masturbating in a department store on September 5th. WTOL reports that a theft prevention officer observed Deputy Dion Ellis holding a T-shirt in front of him and masturbating as he watched various customers in the boys' clothing section of the store. Ellis is facing 30 days in jail and a $250 fine if he is convicted. He is currently on paid leave. A police officer in Cincinnati, Ohio, was arrested last Thursday for threatening two men at gunpoint. WLWT reports that Officer Jeffrey Ertel waved a 9mm handgun and a shotgun around after he was involved in a drunken car crash. Ertel has been charged with aggravated menacing and using weapons while intoxicated. He has been suspended pending the outcome of his case. A woman in Ottawa, Ontario, died on Saturday after a taxi she was a passenger in was involved in a collision with a police car. At the time of the accident, the officer driving the car was transporting a person taken into custody to a police station. Halton Regional Police used pepper spray on a group of nearly 100 teenagers after they refused to leave the Georgetown, Ontario fairgrounds after the 11 p.m. closing time on September 9th. The Georgetown Independent says that police arrested three of the teenagers for causing a disturbance and three others for being intoxicated in a public place. There have been conflicts between police and teenagers at the Georgetown Fair in the past. In 2003, police used fire hoses and rubber bullets to disperse a group of 500 teenagers. An inquest has been called into the death of a man more than 5 years ago after a confrontation with police here in Toronto. According to the Toronto Star, four Toronto police officers were charged in connection with the death, but all were acquitted in November 2003. The inquest will begin on January 9th and is also expected to examine how the Toronto police deal with mentally ill people.
A lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people knew him.
He was able to unlock the padlock that had the chain locked to the seat and then get out and run for help.
Having a former police officer doing something like that, it's, I don't know, kind of disappointing.
Saddened, because I just see so much of that now.
Certainly people are shocked by that. Totally out of character for the George Nugent that we knew.
A former police officer in Whitefield, New Hampshire, was arrested last Wednesday and charged with attempting to kidnap a young boy in New Jersey. According to an Associated Press report, George Nugent worked as a police officer in at least three different New Hampshire communities. Nugent is accused of luring a 15-year-old boy who he met on the internet to an abandoned building and then attempting to chain the boy in his Jeep. The boy fought back and managed to escape and was discovered by a passing motorist with the chain still around his neck. A police officer in Fall River, Massachusetts, was arrested at a highway rest area last Monday. An Associated Press report says that Lieutenant Eduardo Raposo was charged with indecent exposure and unnatural acts. He was off duty at the time of the incident.
We have received allegations of major racial profiling going on.
I'd like to see our department cleaned up, like from the top to the bottom.
I do honestly believe that the department has a number of fine officers, but there are some racist individuals among them, and they should be weeded out.
This community, we're uniting behind the good officers we have and the problems that came up They will not be tolerated, and it will be fully investigated.
Two police officers in Bristol, Connecticut, have been accused of broadcasting racist messages over a pirate FM radio station. The Associated Press reports that officers Daniel Britt and Richard Valentine were accused by NAACP leaders of making the racist remarks. Valentine resigned last Friday and Britt was placed on administrative leave. Britt has been suspended twice in the past. In 1995, he was suspended for 3 days for discriminating against a female subordinate. He was also once suspended for 1 day after he was found sleeping on the job. Valentine was suspended in 2002 for using a work computer for personal reasons. A police officer in New York City was arrested on Saturday after she was accused of stabbing her boyfriend. The New York Times says that Officer Shantae Smith has been charged with assault. The victim of the attack, who lives with and has a child with the officer, was treated for his injuries and released from the hospital. A police officer in Rensselaer, New York, has been charged with attempted assault. WTEN reports that Officer John Martin was involved in a recent dispute with a fellow camper. Martin has been suspended for 30 days without pay. He will not return to active duty until after his criminal charge has been resolved. An 18-year-old claims that police officers in Nassau County, New York, struck him with their squad car last Wednesday, pinning him underneath his bicycle. WABC reports that the teen was going to the store to get milk for his baby sister when the officers rammed into him from behind, leaving him with minor injuries which were later treated at a hospital. The teen says that after he begged the officers to get their car off of him, they left without checking to see if he required medical assistance. The boy has filed a complaint and hired a lawyer. A police officer in Edison, New Jersey, has been charged after running naked from the scene of an accident. The Home News Tribune says that Ioannis Mpatsakis crashed his car into a truck on July 20th and was seen leaving the scene of the accident naked by witnesses. He's charged with assault by auto and hindering in his own apprehension and has been suspended without pay. Four other officers and two supervisors were also charged with failing to report the crash, neglect of duty, and other violations for allegedly trying to hide the crash from superior officers. Edison police officers were also accused of punching and kicking two India Day volunteers who they were trying to arrest during a parade on August 13th. An investigation of that incident is still ongoing. Two men have filed assault charges against two Edison police officers who were involved in a bar brawl on August 25th. A police officer in Hilltown, Pennsylvania, pleaded guilty on Monday to sexually assaulting a boy over a 6-year period beginning when the child was 11 years old. The Allentown Morning Call says that Officer James Kane is facing a possible 167 years in prison. Kane admitted to assaulting the boy during an investigation which began after the abuse was reported by the boy's mother. A prosecutor says that some of the frequent assaults took place while Kane was in uniform. A police officer in Washington, D.C. pleaded guilty to armed robbery on Monday. WTOP reports that Officer Xavier Brooks robbed a couple using his service weapon and also acted as a driver in another robbery earlier on the same day. Brooks is facing up to 45 years in jail when he is sentenced. A police officer in Nashville, Tennessee, was arrested on September 5th after he hit his 14-year-old daughter during an argument at home. The Tennessean reports that Officer Harold Taylor has been charged with assault and is free on a $1,000 bond. A police officer in Morehead City, North Carolina, has been charged with raping a teenager. According to the New Bern Sun Journal, Officer David Booth was charged on August 30th with 2 counts of statutory rape, indecent liberties with a child, and crime against nature. He is being held on a $125,000 bond. A sheriff's deputy in Anderson County, South Carolina, is facing charges for having sex with 2 14-year-old girls. The Associated Press says that Charles Davis has been charged with 2 counts of criminal sexual conduct with a minor and 1 count of lewd act upon a minor. When officers went to his home to arrest him last Wednesday, Davis told them he had taken a large amount of prescription medication and he was taken to a hospital for treatment. Davis's mother was charged with disorderly conduct during the arrest. Three police officers in Fernandina Beach, Florida, were arrested on September 10th and charged with having sex with a 16-year-old. According to the Fernandina Beach News Leader, officers James Branning, Joseph Ramia, and Chris Duffy turned themselves in earlier this month and are facing charges including unlawful sexual activity with a minor. Branning was also subsequently charged with corruption by threat against a public servant after he threatened to kill everyone in the Fernandina Beach Police Department. Duffy has also been charged with official misconduct and perjury after he lied to investigators who were looking into the sex charges. Ramia is free on bond. Duffy and Branning remain in custody after being denied bond reductions last Thursday. This week, it was revealed that the abuse allegations from the 16-year-old were made known to police in 2003, but an investigation was not started until after the teen filed a formal complaint in August 2004, 2 years after the alleged sexual abuse. Two sheriff's deputies in Clay County, Florida, were suspended on Friday after attempting to solicit sex from a sheriff's deputy pretending to be a prostitute. WJXT reports that the two unnamed deputies were on duty but outside their jurisdiction when they were caught. No criminal charges have been filed against the officers, but both were detained briefly and both are currently on administrative leave. Police in West Melbourne, Florida, are trying to locate drugs which they lost during a training exercise last Thursday. According to Florida Today, the police will not name the type of drug or the amount lost. Police were using the drugs to train dogs, and an officer who subsequently discovered the drugs were missing reported it to his supervisor immediately. A police officer in Gentry, Arkansas, was arrested last Monday and charged with sexual assault. The Springdale Morning News reports that Sergeant Charles Harp is suspected of having sex with a minor. He is currently on administrative leave. Harp is the third area police officer to be arrested recently. On August 18th, Elm Springs police officer Timothy Payne was arrested and charged with extorting money from drivers during traffic stops. On September 2nd, Benton County Sheriff's Deputy Joseph Hutchins was arrested on a child pornography charge. A police officer in Topeka, Kansas, was sentenced to 16 months in prison last Friday for stealing money intended to be used for undercover drug purchases. An Associated Press report says that Officer Thomas Fortmiller stole tens of thousands of dollars of police department money to support his gambling debts.
During the process of trying to apply, you know, physical restraint and applying those handcuffs, something happened. And this person went into arrest, and then, of course, he had the brain injury. We will submit it to the district attorney. The district attorney will look at it and determine if there is some kind of criminal liability on the part of our officers or other staff. And if there is, then he will do what he determines is the necessary thing to do as far as any charges.
A man died on Sunday in Santa Cruz, California, after being shocked with a taser by sheriff's deputies on Saturday night. A man in Stuart, Florida, died on August 27th after being shocked twice with a taser by Martin County sheriff's deputies. A man in Adelphi, Ohio, died on August 26th after being shocked by police with a taser. Police in Dayton, Ohio, used a taser on a juvenile whose age has not been released last Friday. Police in Cincinnati, Ohio, used a taser on a 12-year-old girl on September 7th after they were called to her school when she refused to go to class. Last Monday, police in Murray, Utah, used a taser on an innocent bystander who they believed had robbed a bank. The real bank robber is still at large. A woman in West Haven, Connecticut, is suing police for improper use of a taser. She claims she was unnecessarily shocked by Officer Joseph Pirollo when he responded to an argument she was having with one of her tenants. Pirollo is a taser training instructor. A 64-year-old man in Gresham, Oregon, is suing police, the city, and Taser International after being shocked with one of the devices when police responded to a fight in his home in August 2003. Police in Dallas, Texas, have a new taser policy in effect. In the future, police will only be allowed to use tasers on people who are physically assaulting them. Police in Brandon, Manitoba, will not be getting the tasers they want because of shortfalls in their budget. They plan to have another look at the question next year. The Ontario Provincial Police are continuing to phase in tasers for use by their officers. Earlier this year, a coroner's jury recommended that all frontline police officers in the province should be armed with the weapons. Police in Granville, Pennsylvania, have received the go-ahead to purchase tasers from their local council. The mayor of Madison, Wisconsin, approved funding for the purchase of tasers by their police department earlier this month. Taser International, the company which makes the weapons, has hired a new accountant. The old one made an error in a tax calculation which forced the company to restate their 2004 earnings earlier this year. The company announced last week that it had received orders from two overseas law enforcement agencies worth almost $800,000. Despite a press release describing soaring stock prices, company shares are currently worth less than $7.50 each. This is almost the lowest value in the past year.
As they observed the individual inside the car with a handgun in his hand. At this point, shots were fired by both. We know now by both officers. We're unclear if shots were fired from the individual inside the car.
Since our last regular program, in addition to the killings already reported in this program, police officers killed people in New Westminster, British Columbia, Mississauga, Ontario, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Houston, Texas, Nashville, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Indiana, St. Louis, Missouri, Cleveland, Ohio, where police killed a 15-year-old boy in his bedroom, Forest Park, Ohio, Chicago, Illinois, Detroit, Michigan, Derby, Pennsylvania, Tukwila, Washington, Santa Ana, California, Campbell, California, Monterey County, California, Brentwood, California, Long Beach, California, Carson, California, and New Orleans. Samuel Clark worked for more than 20 years as a Newark, New Jersey police officer. After he was badly beaten by a fellow Newark police officer, Clark began a process of discovery. He found that police officers who violated the law were often rewarded with promotions. He discovered that officers who complained about misconduct and racism were driven from their jobs. Clark has written a book called Total Misconduct about his continuing battle to expose police abuse. I spoke with Samuel Clark about his experiences in the Newark Police Department earlier today. When exactly did you become a police officer? What year was that?
1972, November the 20th.
So this was several years after the Newark riots.
Yes, it was 1967.
Right.
I was 17 years old.
So you did live through that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So my understanding of what happened in the riots was they were largely blamed on police misconduct.
Right. That was, it's absolutely correct. That was one of the catalysts that individual that was taken into custody was killed inside of the precinct. That rumor was not true, but he was subject to some physical abuse. But that particular rumor is what actually touched off the rioting.
So I'm kind of wondering about your mindset, about what your frame of mind was when you decided that you were going to become a police officer, when you chose that for a career.
Right. Well, I was expecting my first child, son, and I needed to make more money. And they were actively recruiting persons to join the police force, and it was paying about twice as much as I was making in my present job at that time. And I wanted to get into a career with a friend of mine, but things didn't work out with that particular career. So I decided that, well, I have the qualifications, it pays more money, and I need it for my family, so I'll join.
It's fair to say that you saw some police misconduct. Are you aware of some issues with policing before you joined, though?
Yes, I was. I thought that the police in general were too impersonal and just too authoritarian, and they just didn't seem seem to serve particularly the minority community where I grew up in a normal human way, is the way I saw it. But that wasn't my philosophy, and I felt that I could perform professionally without being abusive or violating someone's rights or anything like that.
And you, in fact, did that for a considerable amount of time as a police officer. You were working for more than 20 years.
Yes.
With no complaints.
Absolutely.
And no no criminal charges, which a lot of people would recognize in Newark is saying something.
Right.
Okay, so 1995, you've been a police officer for going on 20 years.
Right.
So can you tell us what happened to you on that day?
Right. I was assigned to gang intelligence. It was a newly formed division, or squad, really, that tried to address the emerging gang problem. And normally, in that squad, I work, you know, plain clothes, civilian clothes, whatever. And I was getting off. I was on my way to a bookstore, and I heard a call on the radio that an officer needed help. Since I was 4 or 5 blocks away, I, you know, decided to respond to the scene and see what I could do to render assistance. Never did get an opportunity to see the officer that actually called for the help, but I encountered two young men that were among 4 guys that were trying to be frisked by 2 other officers. And when they started to grapple with each other, I ran toward them, or actually walked rapidly. It was only about 20, 30 feet away, and tried to just intervene so that I could break their grip on each other. And that's when a uniform officer grabbed me from behind and tried to choke me to death.
Had you shown him your any identification at this point? Did you have
No, I didn't have an opportunity to show any identification. And I couldn't verbally say anything because of the manner in which he was choking me.
Now, you describe in your book something that's very similar to stories that I've heard from other people who have also been victims of police abuse, and specifically the feeling of helplessness that you felt during this attack. You thought you were going to die, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, there was no question about it.
So, obviously you did not,
right.
And you're in a position where, I guess, so how did they eventually, was he eventually pulled off of you, or?
I just believe he got tired of choking me. And ironically, also, the other officers that were there never intervened to say, okay, wait a minute, that's enough, you know.
Did they know?
The guy's not resisting, you know, let him go.
Did they know you personally, these other officers?
No. The ones on the immediate scene did not know me personally. Later, there were a few other officers that arrived that did know me personally, but that was after I had been released. But I was still rather dazed, you know, from not having enough oxygen.
What did you decide was going to be your course of action then after you've been attacked by one of your fellow officers? This is an officer in the... In a different division of the same department you work for.
That's correct. He worked out of one of the precincts, and I filed a report of the incident of excessive force, and I just felt that this guy had some sort of problem. The way he was, you know, literally trying to kill me, it was just unnecessary because I'd never even considered using that amount of force on the two individuals that I was trying to break up their little physical dispute. That never came into my mind because it just wasn't necessary. And I figured, well, this guy's got to have some kind of a problem. And I filed the reports, and the police department just simply gave him a reprimand.
So for those people who don't know, that's a verbal, it's like a verbal warning.
Yeah.
It's like literally taking somebody into a room and saying, hey, don't do that again.
Don't do that again. That's correct.
And that's it. That's
what. That's it. That's end of story, you know. So.
I'm guessing this wasn't good enough for you.
No, I was alarmed because I just couldn't figure out why they would not try to sanction this guy a little bit harder, a more severe sanction, and also to try to give him some kind of sensitivity training or evaluation as to why he was doing this. And his record, I understand from reliable sources, I did not personally see it, he had several incidents of excessive force. And he committed suicide, I think, about a year and a half later. So this officer did have some problems, and it was unfortunate for all involved that the police department did not address those things when he had the opportunity and also had the knowledge of prior incidents of him using excessive force.
That says something about the complaint system in general, though, particularly at the time, that they can receive a complaint from a police officer whose word is above reproach. It makes you wonder how they deal with complaints or similar complaints from civilians.
Yes, exactly. And I was also shocked when I read that officer's report because it was like two different incidents, you know. And some of the other officers who apparently got together to decide how they would write these reports to reflect that I was doing something wrong. And as a matter of fact, one captain of the captain of the precinct where the officer worked even suggested that I be investigated because I put every officer on the scene in danger.
By going to help.
Yes. I'm chuckling because that's just how ludicrous some type of accusation like that is.
Well, at this point, you began to do a little digging on your own. It was like the beginning of a very quick learning curve for you.
Yeah, because I started asking questions other officers and what have you. I said, what's going on with this disciplinary system? Because I had never been a part of it because I hadn't had any charges brought against me, and I didn't have any hearings, and I wasn't a witness at any hearings. So I was really ignorant to that particular process. So as I was getting more information from other officers, and they would tell me about other incidents where it's like routinely, yeah, that they're not really disciplining guys that do things wrong. They're sort of just giving them a tap on the wrist. And that's what I found out. And it was very, very discouraging and alarming to me.
You spent a considerable amount of time in the years after 1995 writing reports.
Yes. After 1995, it was almost like a nightmare because as I would write reports that are supposed to compel the police department to do an investigation based on just what's in the report, and there were no investigations. Or let me put it this way: if there was an investigation, it certainly was not adequate because I was never interviewed. So if I'm saying that there's corruption, that there's differential treatment, then I should be interviewed if you're going to do anything close to a thorough investigation. However, for all these reports that I had submitted, I was never interviewed about any of the complaints and allegations that I included in the reports.
Could you explain to people who might not know what you mean by differential treatment?
Certainly. A good example is I was sentenced for disobedience to an order because I left the captain's office to call my attorney because he was giving a disciplinary hearing, and I wanted an attorney present. So I said, well, look, I want to call an attorney. He said, don't go. I said, well, I'm going to go call my attorney. So I was given 12 days suspension without pay because I left the captain's office to call an attorney. Certainly not a crime. I did not commit a crime. Whereas four officers decided without a search warrant they would kick in an apartment door, burn money, steal money, ransack the apartment. They were given 6-day suspension without pay. Now, those were criminal offenses that they committed. Theft, arson, criminal mischief, violation of constitutional rights with search and seizure. So I was given twice the sanction, and I did not commit any criminal offense where they committed criminal offenses and received a much lenient sanction. So that's differential treatment.
And the disciplinary process that you would have hoped would have been used against, for instance, the officer or who attacked you, or possibly used more effectively against various police officers who have actually committed criminal offenses, because you chose to speak up, this process was essentially used to get you out of your job.
That's absolutely correct. The overt mission of the internal affairs is to control police officers' behavior and make certain that they follow the rules, regulations, laws, etc. But the actual covert activity is to stop police officers from revealing the truth. And it acts as a chilling effect. And someone like myself, who has the ethics to come forward and say, well, look, this is not correct. What is being done, it's unlawful, it doesn't help solve crime, fight crime, or anything else. It just increases crime and really creates a multi-billion dollar industry called police corruption. Anytime someone does speak up, then that internal process, which is nearly secret from the public, is utilized against that officer to drum that officer out of law enforcement.
And that's what happened to you.
That's exactly what happened to me and some other colleagues of mine who also stepped forward and were exposing these faults in the internal disciplinary system.
And you had several dozen police officers speaking out at one point. Is that correct?
Right. There were police officers who had testified in various court cases in New Jersey Superior Court, in the Administrative Court, explaining how they had made reports and how as soon as they made a report about something that occurred inside of the department that was wrong, they became the focus of the attack. So if, again, as when I made the complaint against the officer who attacked me, I, then became under attack. It was like blame the victim. No, the officer didn't do anything wrong. I was the one that did something wrong, according to the police department. So as soon as you make a complaint, they ignore what your complaint is saying and then come straight after you. And that silences other officers because they see the sanctions that you receive, and they have their mortgage and bills and what have you, and they don't want to go through that. I was given a total of a year suspension without pay and a demotion in rank from lieutenant to sergeant. That's a pretty severe sanction for simply speaking the truth. And I was a lieutenant with a clean record. So if there's another officer without rank and who may not have such a clean record, that officer is certainly not going to open his mouth, his or her mouth.
Could you take us in a little more detail through the process of, I guess, was the 12-day suspension the first suspension?
Well, that was added. The first suspension was 112 days.
To me, this is the amazing part of your book, which is the details of the process that should be used against a problem police officers. It was actually used against you.
And
the fact that they did that in the first place is rather stunning.
Right.
But the details of the way they did it is also a really compelling story.
Yes, because all the facts simply do not matter, because they control the process. The process is internal. It's out of the public view. So they can simply pull out a form, type up a charge on that form, and then have a hearing, find you guilty of whatever infraction they made up.
And you don't even have to be there.
No. I don't even have to be there, which in my case I was not. You notified through the mail or when you come into the precinct for your next tour of duty that now you've been suspended, and you'll have to turn in your badge and your gun and the other police equipment that's issued to you. So this process, because it's internal, they can simply make things up, and once they make them up, they find you guilty, and you're suspended. Now, you do have recourse. You can go to the administrative court in an attempt to get the suspension overturned and your back pay. However, most of the time when you make application to the court, and the time you actually appear in court is about 6 months and sometimes a year. So if you're suspended for a month on some made-up false charge, by the time you come back and you have, once they know that, okay, this guy is contesting this, you're still on the chopping block. So even before the first case could come up, you can find yourself suspended again for another 30 days. Which is another separate case that you have to apply again to the administrative court. You find yourself suspended without pay. You have to feed your family, pay your mortgage, and also pay lawyer's fees. It's very, very difficult. Most officers just surrender and say, well, that's it. Whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do. I'm not going to complain. You want me to violate people's rights? Well, fine, I'll do that. And once they have something over your head, or once they have you in the crosshairs, as we say, then life is not the same unless you play ball, and that is go along with whatever they want, the arrest quotas, and you participate in those arrest quotas, and you don't complain. If it's something that's going to violate someone's rights, you do it, and you don't complain. An incident goes down that involves police brutality or something, and you saw it and you know that the officer's lying, you lie right along with him. Because you say, well, look, I got my family to take care of, and I'm not going to fight these guys because it's too hard of a battle. So that's the approach of most officers. I could understand that. However, I can't live with myself and allow myself to do that, because I'm just prostituting myself. When I'm supposed to be honorable, I'm supposed to be ethical, I'm supposed to follow the law and honor the law. And I'm not going to stop doing that just because someone wants to take my pay away. Then so be it. I'll have to make other arrangements, do other things, but I'm not going to willingly violate someone's rights because I don't want that to happen to me.
So in your case, the first suspension was, I think you said, 172 days.
The first suspension was about 112 days.
Sorry, 112.
The second suspension was 170 days. After the first suspension, I did not come back because I was given the second suspension while I was out on the first.
But I recall that there is a point where you go back in.
Yes, I go back after I was out for an entire year.
And at that point, your job was a much different job.
I had been demoted from lieutenant to sergeant during that time, because that was part of the second suspension, also included a demotion.
Right. And at one point in your book, I remember you confront, was it the mayor?
Yes.
At a debate, and he announces that what happened to you, a demotion in rank, is not possible.
That's correct.
Did you, was that ever resolved? Did you ever take him to task?
That's a matter of public record,
yeah.
That conversation. That's a public transcript, and that exists as a part of the public record. So it's nothing that I made up and anybody can check. He told me it was impossible, and he was going to investigate, and he was going to investigate tomorrow, the very next day. Well, before he investigated, I was suspended. After he investigated, I was fired. So I've never seen his investigation. I would like for him to make his investigation public, which won't happen because there was no investigation. But these are the kind of things that are simply said. It's just rhetoric where a politician or an official just simply says, okay, we're going to do this. That's just to sort of quell the public. But after things calm down and the public sort of forgets and doesn't focus on it or even assumes that, yes, there, you know, there's going to be an investigation. The mayor says he's going to investigate. You know, everything's going to be taken care of. It's simply not the case. And that's done all the time with high-ranking police officials who stand up in public and say, we're not going to tolerate corruption, we're not going to tolerate misconduct. And while they're saying that, they personally know of, by matter of records, that there are 50, 60 officers, maybe 100, 200 in that department, that should be terminated, that have committed serious enough offenses to be terminated.
For example,
rape. How about pleading guilty to rape? There's a Newark officer right now getting paid as we speak who has pleaded guilty to rape while on duty. But that officer is not fired. That officer was not suspended for a year without pay.
I mean, I know we all, it's safe for us all to conclude at this point that you were terminated because you had a conscience.
Right.
But what were their reasons on paper?
The reason on paper was official incompetency.
And how did they, were you at the hearing for that one?
No, I was not.
Okay, so you don't know, you probably don't know details of what they were saying.
No, well, what the official incompetency consisted of was all of these made up charges that they said, well, since he has these 20 charges, it shows that he has failed to perform at an acceptable level.
This is despite the fact that prior to you reporting the officer who attacked you, you had not raised any concerns, you had not had a complaint against you, and you'd not been charged with a crime.
Right. I was one of the most sought-after supervisors in the police department as far as squad commanders wanting me to work for them because of my ability to investigate and write reports, etc. But as a matter of fact, in 1996, when I spoke in front of the Newark Municipal Council, I predicted at that time, when there were no charges, that they would find me incompetent, and they would charge me with anything that they can think of.
And this was based on discussions you'd had with some of your fellow police officers
right.
who shared that experience.
Right. Officer Darren Nance, who was instrumental in bringing my attention to the methods that were used, and that gave me an opportunity to build a record because I knew in advance how they would come after me and what methods they would use. So I was better able to build a record. So when it was all over, I could, you know, prove that what I was saying was true.
You're still in the courts. There's no, I noticed one of the frustrating things about reading your book was there's no happy ending. It leaves you hanging a little bit. Like, you know, there's going to be more to this story.
Yes, there's no happy ending, because the happy ending would be a independent commission that would come and look at the records, and that would prove that what I was saying and what the other officers were saying that had the nerve to speak out were absolutely true, that they are actually protecting criminal cops. And any time someone tries to see the records, the first thing they say, well, it's confidential. That's a very good excuse. It's confidential because if the public could see that, there would be absolutely outrage that you would fire officers like myself and not fire officers who were involved in stealing cars and who were involved in robberies and many other horrendous things.
And not only that, but some of these officers in Newark not only were not properly disciplined, but were in fact given promotions.
Yes. One of the lieutenants that was involved in a stolen oil theft ring inside of the North Police Department and was indicted for it, this individual, this lieutenant, was given the responsibilities of fighting corruption for an entire precinct. So in order to, I guess, further your career, you know, you have to be a criminal, or they feel that it takes a criminal to make a criminal. There was a sergeant who was drunk and driving erratically and ran through, was chased by police officers in another municipality, ran through a couple of red light stop signs. When they finally caught up with the sergeant, he jumped out and assaulted the police, and he was arrested. This guy wasn't given a year suspension without pay. He wasn't demoted. This same individual is now the chief of police of the North Police Department.
Is what's his name?
His name is Bradley.
There's also Santiago.
That's correct.
He's well known outside of New Jersey, as you might imagine.
Right. While he was the director of internal affairs, the police director was stealing police funds, but internal affairs could not discover that.
And where's he today?
Right now, he's the police director of Trenton, the capital city of New Jersey. He's the police director there. After having to leave as the state police superintendent because of the improprieties that he was involved in there.
And he wasn't there very long, was he?
No, I think it was there for under a year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 6 months, if my memory serves me correct.
So now you're in a situation where you've written a book, you've gone to court numerous times for your own case and other people's cases.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say things are better in Newark today than they were when... in 1995 or in 1972, or do you think there's been any improvement? Or
no, it's worse. It appears that the police department is ran by criminals, and I say that what I mean when I say that is, as I explained, the lieutenant that was involved in auto thefts, stealing cars, was put in charge of anti-corruption responsibilities. It seems that everyone that was involved in some criminal activity is placed in charge of trying to of whole squads. You know, if a guy's involved in drugs, he's placed head of narcotics. If a guy's a rapist, they'll put him in to investigate rapes. That seems to be the trend, and many officers are complaining quietly. You know, they'll say things to me, you know, that thank God that you're no longer in this department. It's absolutely crazy, the things that are going on. So they'll complain, but they certainly will not come out publicly, because if they do, they know that it's the end of their career and they won't get help. Because we went to the Attorney General, the U.S. Attorney General, the State Attorney General. We went to the prosecutor. We went to politicians with evidence, not just are word of mouth with evidence. And most of these agencies, they simply ran away. The state attorney general's office told me that they did an exhaustive investigation, but they never investigated. They never interviewed me.
Right, an exhaustive investigation that didn't include an interview with the complaining witness.
Right. How do you do that?
You know, we often hear about other police departments in New Jersey that and across America and Canada, for that matter, that have similar problems. You're probably aware of they seem to be having a fairly big problem right now in Edison, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you took it to state authorities. Do you get the impression that the situation you faced in Newark is common to other police departments?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Any police department that does not have an independent body to have complaints heard externally is susceptible to widespread corruption and differential treatment and all kinds of other misconduct and corruption, because it's the use and manipulation of that internal disciplinary system that creates this blue wall of silence, where the police officials constantly say, "Hey, look, you know, this cops are not going to squeal on each other," and that it's this blue wall of silence. And if police would only come forward, well, that's a bunch of nonsense. That's pure nonsense. We came forward with evidence, with documents. And what do? Attack us and got rid of good, honest officers. They're not interested in corruption because they know it exists. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. There's so much money to be made. Some guys don't even have to cash their check. You know, I'm happy living off the salary that I earn, that the citizens pay me. I don't need other corruption money. I don't want other corruption money. And the police institution seems to feel that the citizens are not qualified to judge them. And I want to be and should be judged by the people that I'm supposed to serve. They're not all criminals.
Now they're paying your salary.
That's correct. And if you're paying, you should have the right to question and judge the service that you're getting. But in the police culture, it's like, no, we're not going to be judged by the citizens that we're going to serve. We're going to police ourselves. It just doesn't work. It won't. It hasn't worked and never will work.
You can learn more about Samuel Clark's book at www.totalmisconduct.com. That's all for Bad Cop, No Donut this week. Feel free to send us your comments and story ideas. The email address for this program is ron@ckln.fm. Bad Cop, No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, Canada, and can be heard in Austin, Texas on KOOP 91.7 FM, who I would strongly urge you to support during their current fundraising drive, which continues through October 2nd. I'm Ron Anisich, and I look forward to telling you more about the police next week.